Hello and welcome to the Economia Autumn Statement Special Podcast. I'm Richard Cree, Editor-in-Chief of Economia, and we've hit the road today and come to Somerset House, where one of our guests is handily located. This is more of that later, but this is appropriate enough since this is where the stamp office was located from about 1789 on until 2011, along with various other Treasury bodies. And obviously yesterday the radical reform of stamp duty was one of the kind of highlight elements of the autumn statement. With me to discuss the implications and ramifications of yesterday's autumn statement are Emma Jones, founder of Enterprise Nation and host here at Somerset House.
You're most welcome.
Thank you. And Bobby Lane, a partner at Shelley Stock Hutter, and Raymond Doherty, the online editor of Economia.
Hello.
Before we get into the details and we start teasing out some of the implications, what were your kind of top line feelings about yesterday's autumn statement?
I think for most of the people I've spoken to at the moment, they were quite underwhelmed in terms of what was offered for small businesses and small and medium-sized businesses. We're in the run-up to the election now. So I think there were some political agendas being played out, but the reality is that a lot of small businesses have some issues that they're facing at the moment, and we're hoping for some measures that were going to help them over the coming 6 months. I think some of them are quite concerned in the run-up to the election what is going to happen in the economy, and that things might stagnate while there's uncertainty around what's going to happen in May. So they were hoping for some measures that would really help them drive forward their businesses over the coming 6 months. And I think the general perception and the general feeling was that there weren't that many measures that are going to help them and deal with the issues that they're facing today.
Okay, thank you very much. Emma, you're obviously lobby government quite hard on the in the interest of small business. Well, did you get what you wanted from the?
Did I get what I wanted from the autumn statement? I think my expectations were quite low. So in that respect, and the same thing as Bobby, we're close to an election. I have to say, if I was Chancellor, I'd probably have done exactly what he did. It was very confidently delivered. It absolutely appealed to the British population. It didn't hugely appeal to the 4.9 million operating small businesses, but there were a few little giveaways. Within the first 5 minutes, 45 million goes to first-time exporters. Business rates, which is the big thing that small businesses are talking about this morning, which is good. Extension to entrepreneurs, investment relief, all very good. But in fact, I suppose what's also quite interesting is looking to see what happens outside of the autumn statement. So here at Somerset House this morning, we had big discussions with HM Revenue and Customs about FATMOS, a particular thing that is a challenge for small businesses at the moment. It wasn't covered in autumn statement, but it was covered here this morning with the men from the tax office. So I think there's a lot of activity that's happening outside of autumn statement, and I think autumn statement was a very political statement as we do go into the election.
Ray, you've been rounding up a few reflections and opinions on yesterday. Do you want to give us a quick summary of what you've
Yes. So from the kind of the wider profession, their big points were tax avoidance and what they're expecting on that. I think there was less than what they expected. But I think that the 25% so-called Google tax on profits was a bit higher than most expected.
Yeah.
So the detail in that actually hasn't come out yet.
No, that's next week, isn't it?
Yeah.
The finance bill.
So while some have welcomed it, some are also saying that it may also scare away some big businesses from the UK. And the reaction was varied. Some it was described as hot air by some in the profession. Others thought it was a stellar autumn statement. Everybody agreed it was quite politically astute. But yeah, those are the kind of main takeaways.
Okay. So then, focusing a bit on small businesses in particular, and Emma, you've already mentioned business rates.
Yep.
He didn't do anything drastic, in a sense. I wonder whether it would have been nicer to see the sort of action that he did, that he took on stamp duty on business rates, a very firm, decisive action.
I think it's work in progress. He said he's going to look at it. I think we're looking around 2016, I think, by the time we'll be done. So I think we're talking about hot air. Hopefully it won't be hot air. it's an issue that is affecting many businesses and retailers, and it's something that's top of their agenda in terms of an issue. And I think I was reading somewhere that it's the third biggest cost for most businesses behind wages and rent. So it is something that needs to be addressed, and I think it is work in progress as opposed to something definitive at the moment. So there might be some new scheme similar to what he did with stamp duty, but I think that's, we'll wait and see on that one.
And I again repeat Bobby there, he has bought himself some waiting time on business rates. It is a huge issue. Small Business Saturday is coming up this Saturday, which of course is mainly about buying from your local retailers, so very retail focused. So it's going to be a topic that comes up across the whole of this week. But he has astutely bought himself some time to say we're on it, but give us a bit more time. One of the things he did announce is the £1,500, what's called Help the High Street, as it's being badged. Again, politically beautiful, Help the High Street. So this is for rateable...
More like a bit of alliteration.
Oh, we love it. Startup Saturday, Tech Tuesday, Help the High Street.
Yeah.
So this is £1,500 now off your rates if you're in a rateable value property of less than £50,000. But, you know, it's interesting. I suppose if you look at what's happening with small business at the moment, and again, you kind of have to put yourself in the shoes of the Chancellor. The reason why I would have done what he did yesterday is small businesses are feeling pretty confident. So startup rates are at a record high. This year, again, we'll repeat records from 2013, over 550,000 people will start a business this year. The government introduced startup loans in 2012, EIS relief, which is helping people get angel investment. There is now a tipping point that is encouraging people to self-employment, so you don't want to mess with that. Of the existing businesses, they are looking to grow. Maybe we'll talk about VATMOS because that may hinder people from exporting into the EU. But apart from that, small businesses are feeling pretty good. They are going global. They're using free and low-cost technology. So again, you wouldn't mess with that. So I think where the Chancellor is coming from in this is he feels pretty much as if he's got the small business vote, because what the Conservative Party have been well known for is being very good stewards of the economy and making sure the economy is in good shape. So if you are the politician leading the party into the next election, maybe you would think, tick, I've done small business and enterprise, they're happy with me. What I now need to focus on is people in the north, the northern powerhouse, and also every citizen who owns a home, which is a big part of the electorate.
It's interesting you say that also, because some people think that while he is concentrating on SMEs and the multinationals, he's missing out on those mid-tier, you know, medium-sized businesses are being neglected.
Well, actually, this is a very moot point, though, because this VATMOS situation, which has come up, on which we were talking with small businesses this morning, is actually quite the opposite. VATMOS was introduced to make sure that big companies do pay tax. So I'm sure many accountants listening know that the point is that what they're changing is it's going to be VAT is going to be based on where your consumer is, as opposed to where you are the supplier.
This is for electronic goods and
basically. Yes, so this is for businesses selling digital products into the EU from the 1st of January will have to register for something called VATMOS. It was done to make sure that Amazon and other big marketplaces pay their fair share of tax, and I think everyone agrees that that's right. What the government didn't realise is that over a quarter of a million small businesses are also swept up into this, and small businesses who have only just started to hear that this is an issue supposedly have to register for VAT by the 1st of January, and small businesses have squealed in response to this and said this is not good that the government did not consult with small businesses. They pulled this in and said let's get big businesses to pay tax without thinking about the implication for small ones.
This is another, I mean, it's just one of those examples, isn't it, of kind of unintended consequences of policy.
Yeah.
But there was a time when there are lots of, you know, small business council and all these kind of people, you know, small business executive and all various other better regulation task force was kind of charged with thinking small first.
Yeah.
Has that dropped away, do you think, from government? Is it now less of a less on their minds?
I think it's very interesting because if you look at, we've talked about hot air and rhetoric and in the past, and over the last few years, every time we've had an autumn statement or a budget, someone has referred to the SMEs as the lifeblood of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be, you know, we've had, they're the part of the economy that's going to drive us out of recession. Now we've got to focus on them. But I actually think in many ways what's being done at the moment is quite out of touch with what the reality is, because the businesses that we're talking to, one of the issues that they have still remains getting finance.
Yeah.
And yesterday we heard about them extending the funding for lending scheme, which means, and they're focusing it more on SMEs, and that's what they said in the autumn statement. The reality is most of the clients that I'm working with aren't really that concerned about the cost of lending. Their biggest challenge is actually getting the banks to lend in the first place and getting the loans in the first place, not the cost of it. So if they have to pay an extra percentage point or two percentage points, that's not what's keeping them up at night. It's the fact that they can't get the banks to lend. We also heard, and I think previously it was leaked, that there was going to be another $500 million for the Enterprise Finance Guarantee Scheme, which is great. But again, I don't think that was said in the autumn statement yesterday, but I don't know whether it was actually true or not, or what's actually happened. But the reality
of that... I didn't actually look at the Green Book, so I don't know if it was all in there.
I think it was.
It was. Yeah. He didn't announce it, but I didn't know if it was confirmed or not, because there was a lot of talk about it before. But that's another interesting chat. We've had some great success with the EFG scheme with our clients over the last few years. But in some recent research that we carried out of SMEs, 8 out of 10 businesses don't know how to access most of these schemes. Mm. So I think, A, the government aren't approaching an attack and tackling the real problem, which is actually getting the banks to lend in the first place. But more importantly, there's a real lack of education. Emma talked about EIS and SEIS and some really great schemes that are out there. So SEIS has been an incredible motivator for people to invest in businesses. And EFG is a great scheme for people that don't have security to offer. But the biggest challenge we have is that a lot of SMEs and a lot of businesses don't know how to access the schemes, don't understand how they operate. And there's an education campaign that needs to be brought in to explain to people how to access these schemes. So there are opportunities, but I think it's more important that the government have to recognise that we've got some good things out there. Don't need to change them, but let's tell people how to make them happen. I know Emma's business, Enterprise Nation, for example, is working with a lot of businesses to help that. And that's a key issue, and it's something that's missed, I think.
In terms of, you talked to Emma at the start about the $45 million for support for export, first-time export. There's not much detail, as I understand it, yet about how that's going to be used and what it's actually going to do.
No.
Do you have any insight?
No, there was hardly any detail. And in fact, it's one of the things on our to-do list today is to find out where that's going. Because interestingly, in September of this year, we launched a campaign called Go Global, because what we could see is that Lord Livingston, who's the new UKTI trade minister, ex-BT, so big sort of large corporate man, went into government and said, my focus is going to be on medium-sized businesses, because the government has set itself very ambitious export targets. And again, as a statistician and a good businessman, he looked at this and said, I can either...
Chartered accountant.
And ex-Arthur Andersen, which is my own firm. So yes, I'm incredibly aware of his background. In fact, I keep on thinking, as a good ex-Andersen man, he will have looked at this and said, I can either get millions of little businesses to sell bits more, or I can focus on fewer medium-sized companies, and if they export a lot, hopefully it will help me reach my targets. So I can understand his sentiment in him saying, let's just focus on medium-sized businesses. But of course, again, what that cuts out from support from UK Trade and Investment is the swathe of small companies who are incredibly ambitious to go global. And so what was interesting yesterday is the Chancellor's words were first-time exporters. So we are also looking into saying, what is that 45 million? Where is it going? And how can we make sure, just as Bobby said, that small businesses actually know how to access it and make the most of it?
And I presume there's a role for accountants in terms of...
There is, but I think that the challenge as well is that a lot of accountants don't understand schemes and how to access them. So it's an education on both sides. It's education, educating the people that are going to want to access them, but also the people that should be telling people how to access them. So I think it's that there's a lot there, because the other example is, you know, we talk about how there's a lot of talk about how the British Business Bank is going to be the one to start pushing these things through and helping, but not one of my clients knows how to access it, knows how it works, knows what it is. And again, it's, I think, 8 out of 10 businesses in our survey, 80%, 84% I think it was actually, haven't got a clue what it is. Yeah. So we can keep talking about these great schemes, the British Business Bank, what we're doing, but on a grassroots and a ground level, no one really knows how to access these things or how they're being pushed out into the marketplace.
And over there, I mean, I've reported on small business for a long time, and over the years it's been the same thing, it's just initiative after initiative, a rebadging, a rebranding, more and more schemes coming in. Actually, in a way, you kind of want, similar to the OTS saying, let's simplify the tax code. Just sort
simplify
of want,
business
simplify
support.
Simplify business support down to just a few schemes.
Some of them are fantastic. SEIS has been brilliant, and without a question of a doubt, it's helped businesses that might never have got started to start up. And I think when I sit in front of someone and say to them and explain the rules of SEIS, the whole face lights up. And they said, well, why don't we know about this? I said, well, everyone knows about it, don't they? No, they don't. So it's how do we get that message out there? And that is something that is absolutely key, because there is some good, there have been some good work, there have been some great initiatives, there are some good things being done for small, medium-sized businesses, but people don't know how to access them. So that, all about education.
Can I just make a couple of things there? I do think, because we have lots of sessions where we take small businesses to go and see a policy advisor who works on small business policy in government, and every single month you will hear quite similar things in terms of small business owners saying, it is great EIS, but how did I not know about it? And growth vouchers are great, how did I not know about it? To which I do play a little bit back to say, if you are starting a business and if you are an entrepreneur, there is an element of self-responsibility that you should, yes. The best entrepreneurs I know are the ones who go out and find out about it. They go to events, they network with their peers, they find out that they've got EIS relief. So I do think there's an element here. I know we sort of put a lot of pressure on the government to say they've got to get news out, but I actually think there's a lot of an onus on entrepreneurs to go and find out for themselves. But also, one thing that you mentioned, Richard, is do accountants have a role to play in making sure their clients are aware of these things? And this is an important and interesting, I guess, evolution in small business we're seeing in Britain at the moment, is that we have fantastic numbers of startups. 2 weeks ago, the UK ranked as fourth most entrepreneurial country in the world in the Global Entrepreneurship Index. But where we appeared weak, and this is one thing we keep on hearing, is great, we've got record startups, we've got confident small businesses. The gaps are getting the right advice to those businesses at the right time. And this programme we've been involved with, called Growth Vouchers, launched earlier this year, has got lots of accountants involved, and it is trying to get a culture across to existing British businesses to say taking advice is a good thing to do. Mm-hmm. Because in the US, where we're catching up with them, clearly, when it comes to starting businesses, what they are much better at than us is they, as soon as they start their business, they think that going and paying for advice is the most natural thing you do. In Britain, we've got a little bit more work to do to encourage businesses to realise that you may be brilliant at making, you know, cups or widgets, but where you probably need a bit of advice is sales and marketing, technology, finance, etc.
Yeah, yeah.
We've got better, actually. I think you're absolutely right. It's moved along historically, but I think that's part of the culture of the people that are starting businesses now. Mm. Because 20 or 30 years ago, the people that started businesses had a broader skill set and could actually do a bit of bookkeeping, could actually read a contract and had a broader skill set. I think some of the entrepreneurs that are starting up today recognise that they're either good at sales or production, or they might be at one certain area of the business, and what they're looking at is where are those skills gaps and how can I plug them, and are now more aware that they are good at one area, and let's bring in people who can help build that skill set and help drive us forward.
Mm. It would be remiss of me not to mention the ICAW's business advice scheme, which is, I think, doing great work connecting entrepreneurs and startups with business advisors.
I think it's superb. We promote it every Startup Saturday. We promote it because you can get three free calls with accountants, which is just lovely.
Getting back to the autumn statement briefly, which is this being a this being a specially themed issue of the podcast. What was the one thing you think, or the key things that were missing? What wasn't in the statement for you?
I think that we're doing a lot of work with young entrepreneurs and people looking to start up businesses. I was very excited to see that they've taken an eye off of under 25s moving forward. But I think could have gone one step further. And I think the again, going back to our research, 45% of the people surveyed said to us that the one thing keeping them awake at night is the cost of employing staff. So although we're taking national insurance off of under 25s for apprenticeships, which is a good thing, I think there's a lot of SMEs out there who are looking at how they can deal with the cost of employing staff. And I would like to have seen some measure. I think we had the £2,000 incentive last year, which was a short-term fix, but actually some long-term measure which incentivised businesses to take on staff and employ new staff and get them into employment with a long-term national insurance incentive. Would have been something nice to have dealt with one of the issues that businesses are facing, which is the employment cost.
So I'm smiling because I don't think yesterday was about long-term anything.
No,
I think it was about May primarily. I think that's my cynical view on it.
I think, look, if we're looking for what the SMEs are looking for, they're looking for help with the main things, and business rates was a key cost.
Yeah.
But the cost of employing staff is another massive issue. And if they want to expand, they know that they've got the cost of the national insurance cost of that, and something to do to help that would have been quite encouraging.
Yeah.
And from my side, the biggest things we always hear about from small businesses is how they make sales and get paid. So One thing that's very topical with us at the moment, it would have been nice to see reference, is the government target of spending 25% of their own money with small businesses by May 2015. So they spend £230 billion every year on a whole load of stuff, not just roads and rail, like small stuff, like bottles, like stationery, like office supplies, like taxi services. So it's a fantastic sales opportunity for small business. So I would have loved to have heard more reference to that in terms of how the target is being reached, because the government is nowhere near.
Okay.
So it has to be 25% by May 2015. And what we're trying to do at Enterprise Nation is say to small businesses, that's 6 months to go. They're way off target. If I were you, I'd go and start pitching now, because I think we'll see a glut of contracts given, hopefully for the best of reasons, to small businesses between now and next May. So that on sales, and then on payment, and I wouldn't necessarily have heard it in Autumn Statement, because there's a lot of focus on this in the Small Business Bill, is prompt payment. It's still an issue. Payment from big companies to little ones is tragic. Companies are taking way too long to pay businesses, and as we all know, the one reason why small businesses fail, or the most common reason, is cash flow. You know, you're spending too much than is coming in, and prompt payment is still an issue. So I would like to have heard a little bit of a reference to that as well.
And that's a particularly dangerous in a recovery period, isn't it, as kind of people get more contracts and take on and expand very quickly, and suddenly fall over because
the cash isn't coming in. Absolutely.
But that's where it comes back to relying on your accountant. So not just talking about SEIR. I'm always going to bring it back to that.
Of course you are. Comes through accountants.
But no, we're talking about earlier how accountants should be the custodian of these schemes and explaining how they work. But also it's down to the business advisors and accountants to be working with these small businesses and saying you have to be doing cash flow forecasts, you have to be doing business plans, you have to be looking at forecasting your business, because exactly as we recover and businesses start growing, they need to make sure that they're in control of their business and it's not controlling them.
If you were working with a business and they were making forecasts every 6 months and then having to revise them every 6 months because they've got it wrong, would you be concerned by that?
I know where you're heading with this, Richard Cream. That's exactly what the Finance Director of Britain is doing, is where you're heading with it. You would be worried. I am a business owner, and as soon as you said that, I thought I would be worried if I was doing forecasts and having to revise because I kept on not getting it right. But this is the thing. And in fact, the ultimate Prime Minister who looked at this country as a business was Margaret Thatcher, and her big philosophy was, you do not spend more than you have. She was an ex-grocer. She grew up in that fashion that you just don't overspend what you're earning. So I have a complete empathy and sympathy with that. But I think what we've got to look at with the UK economy at the moment is this word of confidence that, yes, the Chancellor is revising. You know, we are still...
That's the polite term, isn't it?
He's still revising. And
he's missing.
And, of course, he got lots of... even though, when you did look at the response from the other side of the floor yesterday at Westminster, there isn't that much the other side can say apart from jeer at the fact that it keeps on being revised.
Agreed.
But they can't come back with much else.
No.
So, but the point I was going to make is what we do have is confidence in the economy. So countries from outside of the UK at the moment are looking longingly at our growth by the fact we have it. You know, I think it was the Chancellor said, we are the fastest growing economy in the developed world, I think were the words he used. That's a pretty strong statement to be able to make. So I think overall, it is a very confident position that he is in and that we're in as a country. But yes, of course, if you were the FD of a business, the owner of a business, it would give you cause for concern if you were continuing to have to revise the figures.
Yeah, and if your revenues were...
Lower than expected,
and your costs were higher, you would be...
I gave a speech to 150 15-year-old children about running business, and I used a water tank analogy and said that money comes into a business because you sell something, and that puts water into your tank, and money goes out because water's running out because you're spending it. So as long as there's more water coming in, the water going out, you've got water in your tank, you've got cash in your business, and it works. And 150 15-year-old children understood that. And the number of businesses that I see and other people that don't seem to understand that because they choose to overcomplicate things is quite astounding. But the reality is, putting a forecast together is just that, a forecast. Things change over time. If you're getting it miraculously wrong and really awfully wrong every time, that's something to worry about. But the reality is, how long would a business be allowed to operate continually making losses and overspending? Not very long. So I think it's you know, as long as it's, I think Zenith, as long as you've got confidence in the business or the economy or what's happening, it can continue to go. And as long as you can meet your repayments on your debt and your issues, that's fine. But I do think you've got to always realise that it is a forecast and things do change and things happen that you don't always expect. So you've got to continually manage that and keep an eye on it. So, you know, working with our clients, we forecast more often than every 6 months to make, because things change quite rapidly. So you've got to keep a watching brief and see what's happening.
Right. There was some, unsurprisingly, from a group of accountants, they're continually unhappy that his tax receipts seem to be wrong every time, and they were wrong again yesterday.
I think he's also slightly optimistic, some of the numbers that he's put on what he'll get in from some of the avoidance measures. And I think that's proven in the past. He's kind of not managed to be quite as successful gathering in the revenues.
It's a wonderful thing, though, to hear, because as you watch him go through it, and again, as a business owner, you kind of you're always kind of looking at your budget, saying, right, we'll get however much grand from there, we'll do this from there, and the chances of standing there saying, I'm going to get 5 billion from this, I'm going to get 4 million, you're like, how must that feel to think 5 billion from this, 2 from that?
You need to shake under the Department for Health sofa and see what you can
I don't think we should underestimate, though, how far we've come in the last few years, because the world economy was in a terrible condition. The UK was struggling very badly. We have seen over the last year, huge number of businesses talking to us in particular and saying, look, the UK is a great place to do business. And that was something that they tried to do and the government have tried to do over the last few years, which is make Britain a very attractive place to operate. And they've done that. There's huge numbers of European businesses saying, I want to come into the UK because of the attractive tax regime, because of the way we run our businesses and the opportunities that are presented to us. So I don't think we can underestimate how far we have come in the last few years and the opportunities that are now apparent in the UK economy. And I think that is something that needs to be applauded and we can be excited about as accountants, as business people and people living in Britain, that it is somewhere that's really great and attractive to external companies and companies that want to invest in the UK.
That's interesting too, because it was mentioned yesterday that while the avoidance measures are being backed, the UK has now made the first step from the G20 on this. So a lot of people are asking, has this been agreed behind the scenes and will other countries now follow step, or has Osborne gone out on his own? So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next 6 to 12 months.
Well, I guess this is the other thing you could say about our political leaders at the moment, is they do tend to be pushing forward, and it seems that other countries are following. Mm. So if you look at the EU, we're doing things that are ahead of the other. Whether that gets us good feeling within our neighbouring other states.
Indeed. There's another whole podcast to have on the EU, I suspect. But brilliant. Well, Emma Jones, Bobby Lane, Raymond Doherty, thank you all very much indeed.
Thank you. Thank you.